You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Everyone these days could use a little support, and your friends at the ESO Network are no different. With the ESO Network Patreon, the cool thing is when you help support us, it's you who will benefit. With four tiers starting for as little as 25 cents a week, you can listen to some of your favorite network podcasts early, hear exclusive content, maybe get some ESO swag, or even possibly take a shot at the geek seat. All you need to do is sign up at patreon.com/ESO Network.
I'm Drew Leiter.
I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to episode 201 of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to talk Dark Knight's Death Metal number 3, Detective Comics 1025, Justice League Odyssey number 23, Superman number 24, The Green Lantern season 2 number 6, Wonder Woman number 760, Stargirl season 1 episode 12, Stars and Stripes parts 1, and Stargirl season 1 episode 13, Stars and Stripes part 2. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. All right, Cletus, first up for DC news, the axe hits hard at DC Comics. And we didn't really see all this news until I got off the podcast last week.
No, yeah, you're right. We knew it was likely that DC was going to get hit by this. We knew layoffs were coming, and now we know more of the specifics.
Yeah. So among those said to be losing their positions were Editor-in-Chief Bob Harris, Senior Vice President Hank Knowles, Vice President of Marketing and Creative Services Jonah Wieland, VP of Global Publishing Initiatives and Digital Strategy Bobby Chase, Senior Story Editor Brian Cunningham, Executive Editor Mark Doyle, and that's all I have on my list right there. There was more than that, obviously. And Jim Lee is supposed to remain Editor-in-Chief at this point. See, the problem with all this DC news is I kept getting conflicting things.
I don't think Lee's supposed to be the editor anymore. I think he's the publisher, but they've moved other... I believe it's two women have been put in charge of the...
Oh, that's right. You're right, Cletus, because I have that in my notes here somewhere, too. I have a lot of notes here. I'm trying to keep everything straight. I had different sources I was getting information from. Some of them seem to be conflicting. So I try to get as much... as I could out of it. Okay. I have Jim Lee confirmed that he is still DC publisher, which you just said, and that Marie Jovins and Michelle Wells are the new interim editors-in-chief. And they're replacing Bob Harris. Now, it says, I have here that Jim Lee will remain publisher to focus on creative content and strategy, according to an interview he did with The Hollywood Reporter. And Lee also confirmed that DC will be bringing in someone to be general manager to oversee the operational aspects of DC starting in September.
One of the other things that we saw coming out of this is there's not specifics to it, which is bizarre. It's such a bizarre thing to specify without naming a person, is that they're bringing in somebody with an esports background to run DC, which is just weird. Like, you would assume, and you're saying there's a specific person in mind, right? Because otherwise, why would that be the qualification? I don't get that.
I saw that, and I thought that was weird myself. The only thing I can understand, or the only reason I could see him coming over, is it's digital. Whatever he was doing over there is digital. And they're obviously...
But I don't think it's a specific... From what I could tell, and I could be misreading the reports too, it's not a specific person that they're talking about. Or at least they have not clarified who it is. They're just saying a person from esports, which is like... I don't know. Either they do actually have the person in mind, and for whatever reason they're not naming them yet, which would be odd because they've named everybody else, or they don't have a specific person, in which case, why is that the thing that you're looking for? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Now, from what I read, I remember seeing stuff about that. I thought they had a specific person in mind, or at least that's what it sounded like, but they didn't name them. So
yeah, I will admit I was confused on that point because initially I thought it was a specific person, and then the more stuff I read, it became more vague, I guess, that it was actually a singular person and not just a bizarre qualification that they were looking for.
No, I thought, from what I read, I thought they had a specific person coming over from,
I hope so,
from there, cause... and but it seems odd that you'd be going from sports to comics, but hey, I mean, if it's just bringing him over here for his technological knowledge, it wouldn't matter either way.
Well,
you know what I mean?
And then the big thing that we can see, I think the really major thing to take away from a lot of this is that when you're part of a larger conglomeration and being run by suits who don't care about the specific medium that you're in, and only care about what the numbers are in the spreadsheet are that you're producing, this is the sort of stuff that's going to happen. Like, obviously, major changes were happening across the board, you know, with Warner Brothers and then because of the AT&T stuff. But, like, I don't see this. I know, obviously, they're going to come out and be putting a big positive spin on this, of course. Why would they do anything different? I have a hard time seeing how DC somehow comes out better, like making better comics. You know what I mean? I can see the DC brand remaining profitable. That would not surprise me because you've got Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman. It's pretty hard to not sell, right?
Right.
I worry that we're going down a road in which the quality of the comics isn't going to really matter. And I'm certain it already does not matter to the head people in charge. And I'm not talking to, I'm talking people above Jim Lee. I'm confident it doesn't matter to them. It could be churning out garbage as long as it sells. And, you know, and that's, I think that's the problem, is we're going to see a lot of this. We're getting, this guy might be great that they're bringing in. I have no idea. But you're bringing in a dude who's not a comics dude. You're bringing in a non-comics guy to come fix comics. That's not how that works. I don't bring in a butcher to figure out what's wrong with the art studio.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, I want to be positive and optimistic about this, but it's kind of hard to be. I mean, a lot of people I know were really worried when Disney bought Marvel that this would happen to Marvel. And there were certainly changes, and not necessarily all positive changes that happened with Marvel. But the fact of the matter remains, at least with Disney, is that it's still primarily an entertainment company that owns them. And now we're at a point with DC where Warner Brothers isn't even the parent company with them anymore. It's AT&T. AT&T is not even, like, I would say not even half about entertainment. It certainly is a big part of them. But so you've got the top of the business there. That's not even their wheelhouse. And you got other reports, like, we know the DC Black Label is ending, which is, I think, really unfortunate because I don't see a reason for that to end. But one of the reasons for it is that one of the new editors isn't a huge fan of the more mature style of superhero comics, which is fair. That's fine. And I'm not saying that all comics should be like that, but that was sort of the point of the Black Label, is that not all comics should be like that, so we have this specific label for that style while we can still do a more, you know, general audience style elsewhere. And when you move away from, like, I worry that DC is going to become more and more just like selling the brand instead of telling stories. Like, I know, in, you know, business speak, they're telling stories, whatever. I worry that we're on a path potentially where DC isn't it, the main focus of a DC comic is not to sell a story or tell a story. It's to sell the brand, to sell IP. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. And I'm a little worried about that myself. So, fingers crossed. You know, if they keep good creators on, we're gonna get good stories. But if they're just slapping anybody on anything, then
My concern is that they did. In a sense, DC tried that, right? With Rebirth, they got the big guns back in. And it did work. The frustrating thing is that it did work, and then they changed it. But I feel like if you're a suit who's not involved in it, you're just, again, purely looking at the numbers, DC tried that. They brought in the big guns, and it didn't really work. They didn't sell unreasonable numbers. And so you look at that and go, like, well, that wasn't that worth it. Why pay these guys? Let's bring in, dudes that we don't have to pay that much. Get an inferior product if you're a comic book fan, but if you're DC or the people above the AT&T, that sells a bigger profit margin because you're paying that dude pennies and that comic sells either way.
yeah.
I don't know. I don't mean to be doom and gloom. There are things that this could certainly potentially work out. And I do think there are a lot of things. I think we're probably going to continue to get a lot of really great DC stuff in other media. You know what I mean? I think I don't. I mean, I do think this current CW universe is probably in the back half of its lifespan, but I think we're going to continue to get more, live action content and animated content. But the comics, the lifeblood of the whole thing, I don't know. I am not nearly as optimistic about that.
Yeah, we'll just have to see. Hopefully they keep good creative teams on, but we'll see what happens. All right, well, DC publisher Jim Lee opened up about the comic book company's future, stating DC publishing line will be reduced by 25%. And as for what the future of DC looks like, Lee leans heavily on the idea of digital comics as the best way to reach fans while maintaining a sustainable model. Lee says you'll definitely see more international content. You're going to see more digital content. And when you talk about growing our business, both physical and digital, to me, the opportunities are global. That's what we'll be focusing on. With digital, that's more of a windowing issue, meaning we'll go out there with digital content and stuff that performs well, and digital also performs well in print. So looks like they're going to be having publishing digital heavily, and then probably putting that stuff in trades. That's what it sounds like they're planning on doing. I'm sure
Which,
you'll
I
still
mean,
have, I'm sure you'll still have your print stuff, but it'd just be a lot less.
we, you and I have predicted that for almost the entirety of this podcast. It was, whether you like it or not, it was inevitable that comics were going to hit this point. It just was. It is, they just don't sell enough physically anymore to justify the cost it takes to make them. And that's why you keep getting all of these books canceled. And you know what I mean? Because you could get away with, in peak of comics, you could get away with a mediocre title because it would still sell enough. It would be fine, right? But now, if it's not selling gangbusters, you are probably turning a loss on those comics. So it's inevitable that it would move to digital. I do, and I've talked about that a lot, and that trades were clearly where it was headed. I mean, if you look at other comic markets outside of the US, a lot of them are already at that point. Like manga, for example, technically there are ways to, read the stuff, episodically issue, so to speak. But most of it's just done in the collected trades, right? I mean, that's certainly it is here, but other markets have already gotten to that point. And really, outside of Marvel and DC, American comics had already kind of gotten to that point. Like, Image still does issues, certainly, but there is no way that Image's main profit is on single issues. It is absolutely on trades. And their trades are frequently top sellers, like Saga, one of their biggest titles, I'm sure sells decently issue by issue, but it sells phenomenally in trade. It is always one of the top sellers in trade format. So, I mean, to be honest with you, Marvel and DC have been late to the bus in that regard.
it was kind of inevitable that we would reach this point. What that means for comic book stores, though, I don't know. I don't know how they're going to adapt.
I don't know how they're going to adapt either. I see them going away, or just going to mostly back issues.
Yeah, you know, a lot of them already have a bunch of trades to begin with, because again, that's frankly where the market's been going. I worry if that's enough to maintain a store. I hope it is. I love comic book stores. And I'm sure most of the people listening to our podcast do too.
I'm sure.
I don't know. I think you're right. I mean, obviously a lot of them have already been hit pretty hard by the virus in the first place. But then, you know that Marvel will be following suit at some point. They might not do it right away. It might be a year or two, but they'll get there.
Yeah.
And again, I don't think solid issues are going away completely, but they are going to be pretty limited. Give it a few years. I don't think we're going to be seeing a ton of mainstream comics in single issue physical form.
Yeah, I see that going that way too. All right. Also in DC news, I have that DC cancels Teen Titans, Young Justice, Suicide Squad, Hawkman, and John Constantine Hellblazer. They're all supposed to be ending in November.
What was interesting to me is some of the reaction I read to this was like, well, this is another, you know, casualty of the layoffs. And I thought to myself, have you been paying attention? A lot of these titles that I don't know necessarily that these are connected, to be honest with you. This is very much in pattern with a lot of these books that we're seeing. And if you look across the board, it's the same type of books that have been getting canceled in, you know, the last, what, three or four podcasts that we've done. They're, you know, lower tier characters that in the modern market of superhero comics just are not enough to maintain an ongoing book.
Right. And in that list, there's only one comic we were reviewing anyways, which was Young Justice.
I will say, I haven't read it myself, but I wanted to just mention it, and I'm interested to check it out now. In reading about these cancellations, the book I saw the most like, oh man, reaction to was Hawkman. Apparently it's really good.
Is it?
That's what I read. Again, I cannot speak personally because I've only read what we read on the podcast, but I read a number of very positive reactions to the comic, and a lot of people were bummed that it was going.
Well, that's a bummer. I'd seen it. I remember when it launched, and I was like, should we review this, or should we take on another title? And I was like, I don't think that one will last. And it lasted a lot longer than...
the same thought as you. Well, and honestly, to defend that further, a lot of the Hawkman books recently have been garbage. So...
And we don't blame you. And I remember us reviewing like a Hawkman miniseries, and if I remember right, it wasn't that good. So
I don't know. The one that sticks out in my head was the New 52. Rob Liefeld had a run on it.
Well, you know, we wouldn't have been reviewing that at the time if we were.
Well, yeah. I know the podcast wasn't around at that point, but like, you know, high point for Hawkman, definitely. It's funny. I've always kind of enjoyed that. It's funny to me, when I was getting into comics, I didn't realize at the time how much of Geoff Johns' stuff was getting me into it. Like, obvious. So I've talked about on the podcast before that his Green Lantern run was what really, like, it's not the first comic I read, but it was what really got me into like comics and following what was actually coming out currently. And then as that happened, around when that happened, was a, I think this happened slightly before Green Lantern started, was when the whole Infinite Crisis thing, and that's where I've told you this, I got into the Rand Thanagar miniseries that went right before Infinite Crisis, and it was right before I moved, and I never got to finish the miniseries until like 10 years later. And one of the other books that was going on at that time was written by Johns, and I didn't realize it, or at least started by Johns, was Hawkman. And I really enjoyed that title for a while, and it briefly, towards the end of its run, it shifted to being a Hawkgirl title. And it was pretty good. And it was one of those things, like, I liked all these different books, and then retroactively I looked back and I was like, oh, this was all John's projects.
All right. In other DC news, we have Jim Lee reveals that the future of the DC Universe app the original content that they have on there is migrating over to HBO Max. But he says the comics are going to, they're going to stay around. So it's going to become like the Marvel version, where it's just the backlog of the DC comics.
That's great. I mean, I can't tell you how thrilled I was. Now, they do need to change the price point to reflect that.
Yes, they have not said anything about that yet.
Right, which they need to. I'm sorry, you cannot charge the same price for just a comics library. You can't. As big of a fan of comics as I am, you just can't. But that's great. I mean, that's what I wanted. And it would be, because it would be stupid. Frankly, it would be stupid to build up a digital library like that, especially when you're talking about moving digital and how that's the future for your company, and then to get rid of it. Like, that would be the dumbest thing you can do. So I'm very glad that they're keeping it around.
All right. And another DC news. DC has made the return of Jeff Lemire's Sweet Tooth official, and it's going to return on November 3rd as a monthly 6-issue Black Label limited series, indicating that the content is appropriate for readers 17+. So if they're making that Black Label, they must be hanging on to the Black Label for a little longer, at least.
Yeah, it's weird. I think from what I read, all of the books that were supposed to come out as Black Label books are still like that. From what I understood, nothing is getting canceled because of that, but that they're basically, it's those books and then it's done.
That's understandable, because they want to get, I'm sure they've been working on, you know, artwork and stuff for these, so they want to get them out, but they're just not going to start any new projects.
I'm hopeful that potentially by the time some of these projects finish, we'll have seen a longer lifespan on the Black Label stuff, and we can see maybe sales-wise if maybe it's able to justify its existence, is my hope. I'd say pretty unlikely, if not impossible, but I don't know. I do feel like some of their biggest stuff, I don't know if it's just personal bias and like the type of stories that appeal to me, but it does feel like some of their bigger stuff that's coming out is coming out of that label.
Well, I'll tell you, Cletus, over the years, the mature stuff has come and gone several times, so I wouldn't be surprised if they got rid of it and brought it back again in a few years. Yeah. So.
And again, I am not arguing that DC should lean into that by any means. I just think something like that, I think it's a good, I think there's a reason for it to exist, because I totally agree. Not all superhero comics should be like that. Like, we had that in the 90s and it wasn't great. But I think it's a good way to, honestly, I think it's the best way to draw in the big creators, because it gives them the biggest license to do what they want, which is the whole reason why they're not working for the two big companies in the first place. So that's honestly the biggest reason. It's not necessarily because I need to have curse words in my comics or anything like that. It's just, I feel like the creative license that it gives is more likely to draw in the kind of creators that I want to actually read.
Well, that's why you had popular titles that were under the Vertigo tag, or you had Elseworlds kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a creative outlet for those that don't need to be in with the mainstream stuff. So. All right, and in other DC news, Punchline is going to get a solo 48-page one-shot in November, written by James Tynion IV and Sam Johns, with art by Maraca Aldofolo, with covers done by Yasmin Hutri and Frank Cho.
I think this is kind of interesting. I mean, say what you want about whether Punchline as a character should exist or not, but I think it's interesting, and in that this could be something interesting to do for different characters, where you're almost writing like a novella in a sense, with, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Because from my understanding from the description of this, and I could be, you know, it could be wrong, it's essentially one giant 48-page story. That's what it sounds like. That could be interesting. That could be really interesting to do in the future with other characters.
Yeah, that could. It'll be interesting to see what Punchline looks like on her own out from the underneath the shadow of the Joker too, because this one shot may be how good it is going to depend on whether the character actually sticks around or not.
I would agree with that. I would totally agree with that. I mean, you know, I'm sure DC's going to try and stick with it for a while and make it work. But if it's successful, if that comic's good, yeah, I totally agree. That definitely helps increase the chances of the survival of that character.
All right, and for our last bit of DC news, a new John Ridley written Batman series is coming to DC. While light on details, Jim Lee called it a limited series that will have a huge impact on the rest of the line.
Will it?
I don't know. That's a bold thing to say, isn't it?
obviously they always say that, but like, you always, if you like to tone down the hyperbole to what it probably actually is, that's still surprising news. Like, can you imagine just any creator, just bringing in a creator onto an overall, you know, Bat, like the Bat family, the Superman books, whatever, and just being like, yeah, this creator's going to come in, write a miniseries, and you guys are going to all need to adapt around that. Surprising, if that's really the case. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, and unless this is dictated, you know, above Jim Lee, could be. Guess we'll just have to wait and find out what the heck that limited series is going to be.
Yeah, I mean, again, I'm not criticizing it. It could be good. It's just, you know, that's not typically how a lot of these books get altered in terms of their continuity. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. All right, well, that wraps up DC News for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
Welcome to the Double Feature Picture Show. What do you want to see?
Well, I want to see something really good and something really bad.
Like maybe Total Recall and Junior?
Sure.
Or The Rocketeer and Country Bears?
Absolutely.
Maybe even Dogma and Yoga Hoses?
I mean, of course. Who programs such cinematic excellence and hot garbage together?
Why, only the double-edged double bill, my good man. Available on the ESO Network and wherever you get podcasts.
And we're back! But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know, there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers. 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 We've got spoilers, spoilers for you. We got spoilers, 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 spoilers. We've got spoilers, spoilers for you, for you.
Let's talk Dark Knight's Death Metal number 3. The issue opens up on New Apocalypse, a prison for the remaining heroes inside of the heart of our dying sun. Wonder Woman, Harley Quinn, and Batman are here to rescue Jaro. I was not expecting to see Jaro in this issue, and I was pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, I agree.
We see this world is ruled by a Batman with the powers of Darkseid, and his pair of Robins are flying around everywhere causing havoc. This Darkseid Batman is using a machine powered by Mr. Miracle to zap Superman with kryptonite to kill his Kryptonian cells and to kill him with anti-life. So we see Wonder Woman, Batman, and Superman are able to defeat the Darkseid Batman and rescue the captured heroes. Now, back at the Crypt of Heroes, King Robin shows up. And this evil Robin we see is very intelligent and seems to know all about the heroes. We see the Dark Knight shows up and chases after the Flashes, and he wants Wally West's powers for himself. Now, Wonder Woman explains that Jaro will physically block the Dark Knight and the Batman Who Laughs, while Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman sneak into the dark multiverse and steal the energy needed to restart the universe. And in the last few pages of the comic, we see that Lobo is collecting death metal for Lex Luthor, who wants to change the story of the universe.
We were wondering, I think it was last week, whether the Robin that we saw,
that's supposed to be Robin King would be reflected in the main book. And clearly we see that this issue is very much more in line with the characterization we saw in his sort of one shot.
Yeah.
Which is good. I mean, he's more interesting. But it is still still a really drastic change from, again, which was a character that could literally only say the word crow within this same miniseries.
I know. It is strange, but it's a lot more interesting than the crow Robins. I have to admit that.
The pair of Robins were a pretty funny idea, too.
Yes, I really like that, too. And the idea of a Darkseid Batman, that's actually an idea I'd be more interested in seeing more of. But obviously we're not going to here. So, but I thought that was an interesting concept.
And we also got a reference to Final Crisis, which makes sense given that this is all about, essentially, it's like a crossover about crossovers. So, it makes sense, A, because it was a major crisis event. But also, I was a little bit surprised to see it, only in that it so frequently is not mentioned, just because of, it wasn't the major status quo shift that the other crisis ones were. Not that major things didn't happen in the story, but like, not in the same way. And it also happened relatively close to the New 52, and so its impact wasn't really felt as much. So it's just one of those things, like, when they mention it, it's like, oh yeah, of course that would get mentioned.
Me, I was happy to see they brought Jaro back, and I'm interested in seeing more of him. Surprised to see Lex Luthor in this, but I guess it shouldn't be that surprising.
Yeah, I mean, given his relevance to the story that led to this in the first place, it only feels right that he'd be involved.
Yeah, and of course they just had to throw Lobo in there.
That was pretty interesting, because he seemed to be invading Mixie and Batmite's world.
Oh, yeah, the fifth dimension.
I was a little bit surprised we didn't see... I thought we would, like, get a glimpse of Batmite in that. You know what I mean? Not getting a Batman story or subplot, anything like that. I just thought that in that scene with him attacking fifth dimensional beings, I thought we might see one of the two guys pop up.
Yeah, you're right. That is surprising they didn't throw that in there, especially with having all the different evil Batmans. So
I imagine maybe we will see Batmite. It also makes me wonder, would we see the Alan Moore version of Mixie from, what is it, Whatever Happened to the Man Tomorrow?
That would be interesting, wouldn't it?
It would fit, right? It would,
yeah.
Fit. Again, that's pure speculation, but that would be, it would fit the story and would be pretty interesting to see if they pulled that reference.
Yeah. They might and they might not. We'll just have to see. All right, let's move on to our next title for this week, Detective Comics 1025. So the issue opens up with Batwoman racing across Gotham on her motorcycle to Holy Cross Cemetery, where the Joker's gang has Commissioner Bullock and the GCPD pinned down. And we see that Batwoman is able to free Bullock and his men. Next, the Joker's gang sends in drones to take on the GCPD. And we see Batman actually shows up and joins the fight. And we have Batwoman and Batman decide to shut down the 3D printers at Wayne Enterprises and rescue Lucius Fox. I have to say, Cletus, I was surprised how much this issue actually tied into the Joker War with the major impact of rescuing Lucius Fox. Batwoman was actually the main character of this book, with Batman being her backup partner, basically. It was nice to actually see, you know, somebody from the Bat family show up and a team up happen. And I just thought it was interesting that Batwoman took the lead in this title and Batman was there for support. It was really interesting. The other thing I have to say about this is I think this is Tomasi's best issue on his run so far.
I would agree. And I also I truly don't think it's a coincidence. I do think comics tend to be better. The writing will even come across better when you have better art. And this, I thought, was one of the best drawn books that we've read for Detective Comics as well. I really like the art in this book.
Yeah, it was really good. I really enjoyed this issue, and I was just surprised how much it, from what we've seen from some of the other tie-in titles to the main storyline, how much this actually tied into the main storyline. I was just shocked by that. And then with them rescuing Lucius Fox, that's a major thing that's going to impact the story. And it was well written, it was well drawn. I was just overall happy with it, and was very happy to see Tomasi put out a good issue.
Yeah, no, I agree on all counts. I mean, it's really the only one that we've read that's been in like a legit actual tie-in.
Yes, it is.
And to do it, and like you said, such a major way with Lucius Fox. Yeah, no, I was shocked. I was shocked when I was reading. I was like, wait, this is relevant? It's good? The art's really good? What? It was a very pleasant surprise.
It was. And I hope they keep up the quality with Detective Comics moving forward, and we don't slip back into what it was.
I understand. This is the thing that drives me nuts, because if you're looking at it from a number standpoint, I understand why you would make Detective Comics a Batman comic. Obviously, that's where he got started and all that. But when you do that, you essentially just have two Batman solo titles. And I know they've got that going on with Superman, too. And honestly, in both cases, like, I don't know that that's the best thing to do. I think one of the two, and if Batman's labeled Batman, so that one makes the most sense to be the solo title, I think Detective Comics is better suited to stories like this, where, sure, Batman's in it, but it focuses on a different Bat character. We saw an attempt at that at the start with Rebirth, and in my opinion, and I think yours as well, that fell apart pretty quick. But
yeah,
but
I did
think that basic idea. It doesn't need to be a team book necessarily. I mean, you can do that. But even something like almost like a Brave and the Bold type thing,
yeah,
I think would be more interesting to do with this, where it is a Bat book without question, but not necessarily a second Bat solo book, because Batman, the actual Batman book, is always going to take precedent, as it should. That just makes sense. But if that's the case, then why give me a second? Like, that's the problem. Every time Detective Comics is essentially a second solo title, it's always worse. It's, you know what I mean? Because they're putting the better creative team on the Batman book. And so you're always essentially telling people almost openly, look, this is an inferior product, but we expect you to buy it anyway. Why? Why do that? Why not, you know, do something like we read in this book, where it's certainly a Batman story, but, you know, it focuses much more, like you said, on Batwoman. It doesn't always need to be Batwoman. Like, maybe this week it's Batwoman. Next time it's Batman and Drake, or next time it's Batman and Nightwing. I don't know. I think that's a better use of the title, and I think it gives people more of a reason to read the title.
Agreed. I'd definitely read Team Up with some of the different Batman family. I can guarantee it. So yeah, I like that idea a lot, and hopefully they continue what we've read in this moving forward. Alright, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Justice League Odyssey number 23. So the issue opens up with two happy epochs who have almost completed the revision mechanism, and they congratulate each other on how well they dealt with Jessica Cruz. Meanwhile, Darkseid battles the Eschaton, and while the rest of the Justice League Odyssey just watches, I kind of blame Dexstar for forgetting the popcorn on that one. Darkseid eventually defeats the Eschaton, and Justice League Odyssey retreat. Darkseid must restore his power, so we send Cyborg to lead the final assault on Epoch. Cyborg leads the assault on Blackfire and the rest of the JLO, defeating them. Then we see Jessica Cruz returns from the past just in time to face Cyborg, and she notices Darkseid's control over Cyborg has lapsed, and she's able to reach Victor Stone. Now we see that Arla Hax has returned to the revision mechanism chamber to offer her help to Epoch. She states that she is a technician and of little use on the front line, and the Epochs gladly accept her help, and when the Epochs least expect it, Arla Hax shoots them. And then Darkseid appears and states that Arla Hex's life will be spared, and that she has served him well. Let's see, we're on issue 23. So we got two more issues of this left. And it's definitely coming to a conclusion.
It reads like, you know, close to the conclusion of a story too. So it does, to DC's credit, it does seem like they allowed the, you know, the book to tell its story fully, which is good. I've been pretty openly mediocre towards this title, and that just continues for this one. It was fine.
Yeah, that's about all you can say about this. This is fine.
It's just one of those things I can't imagine, and almost the book is almost openly saying it too, where like nothing in this book is ultimately going to
affect the main line,
affect anything, which it doesn't. Books don't need to do that. I don't mean to say that like that's a bad thing, but if it's not affecting the main line, then it really needs to stand on just being a good story. And for me, it's been fine. You know what I mean? Like, it's been neither consequential nor a gripping story to me, and so I'm just sort of like, okay.
Yeah. Well, when this launched, we had Justice League, Dark, and Justice League Odyssey, and this has definitely been the worst of the three.
Certainly.
So.
Although, to its in fairness, it did not have the dips that Justice League got when Snyder left, so.
That's true.
It is not risen in quality at all, but it has stayed at a very flat line of mediocrity across
its whole run.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Superman 24. So, Xanadoth has come to the Tower of Fate to claim the Helmet of Fate from Khalid. And when Dr. Fate doesn't comply, Xanadoth attacks both him and Superman. We see Naboo flees to a place between worlds, and Dr. Fate is able to bring Superman to this place between world. And I wasn't sure. I think it was just his physical, it wasn't his physical self that actually went there. It seemed like it was just his mind. Do you agree with that?
I think so. I mean, because Xanadoth didn't know that they had left.
Yeah.
So I would have to agree with you there.
So they could have been a little more clear about that.
Well, I mean, and that kind of goes to my main criticism with this book, where, like, I know Bendis tried to explain, and I mean, he does explain how they beat Xanadoth, but it still kind of feels like, I don't know, out of the blue, if that makes sense. Like he's got them totally cornered, totally screwed, and then Khalid sort of like, oh, we just do this and it's fine, we'll win. And it's like, what? That was the solution the whole time. That doesn't seem like that was all that hard.
No. So we have Superman all of a sudden has the Helmet of Fate on and able to fight back. I did like seeing Superman with the Helmet of Fate on. I thought that was funny. And with the help of the Justice League Dark, Dr. Fate is able to release Veronica from Xanadu's hold. Or has he? Because at the very end of the issue, the very last panel, it still seems like Veronica is possessed, and this guy's not gone. It seems like Xanadoth will be back. And I'm curious if Xanadoth is going to be back in the Superman title, or will we see this character in Justice League Dark?
I would be a little bit surprised if we saw it in Justice League Dark. Possible, certainly possible. I don't know. I would be a little bit surprised.
Yeah. So, I was curious on that. It was nice seeing Justice League Dark in this. They didn't really do that much. They were just kind of there, I thought.
No, yeah, I agree. It was exactly that. I appreciated their presence, but it was one of the things, like, it made sense. Like, it's totally logical for them to be part of that story. But not really. It was really almost like they were there because, like, they sort of need to be there for that.
Yeah, it did. And we're going to be seeing this character again at some point. Hopefully in a little better story, too.
I very much am in favor of a, you know, magic-based Superman story. That's cool. That's not something that's told all the time. But this was kind of whatever at best, I would say.
Yeah. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, The Green Lantern Season 2, Number 6. Hal Jordan is brought into a hospital aboard a spaceship. His doctor is from the same species as Starro, and the alien nurse, Lilo Alagua. Jordan thinks he's dated her. I found that freaking hilarious.
Probably has. She's a very pretty character.
I noticed she didn't answer him. The hospital spaceship comes under attack from aliens from the antimatter universe. And we see Hal Jordan finds a ring from one of the fallen lanterns and uses it. And apparently Hal Jordan dies in battle, and at the end of the issue is talking with the Guardians. That was a little unclear to me what exactly happened there.
They certainly are at least posing it as if he's dead.
Yeah.
I mean, we both know that that's not going to... I mean, Morrison's book just goes weird places, so I'm sure he may even actually be dead, effectively, but not really.
So, I found this issue humorous in several places.
Yeah,
so,
well, like the lion that was essentially the...
broken-tailed lion?
Foghorn Leghorn.
Yes.
The way he was talking. I enjoyed it. And, you know, it's one of those things, like, I've definitely overall enjoyed Morrison's run on Green Lantern. It's been weird as hell, but that, like, that's exactly what I expected. But the issues where it's a little bit clearer what's going on definitely stick out as the better issues to me. And this being one of them, where it was the ones that are easier to follow the plot, where you can kind of understand, because, like, he's a good, certainly from my opinion, he's a good writer. It's like if you can follow the plot, it's always there, but it's just the ones where you can latch on to what he's trying to get at.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's move on to our last title for this week, Wonder Woman 760. So Wonder Woman confronts Maxwell Lord, and of course Max states that he saved Wonder Woman from all those criminals. Wonder Woman states that she does not need saving, and Max states that he is not the same man she knew. And when Wonder Woman is ready to believe him, he'll be there waiting. Now we see Wonder Woman goes and visits Eda Candy, and learns that there have been other incidents that could also be contributed to mind control. And Eda explains that they have tags on hospitals, social media, police reports, and they're finding no clear link between the incidents. And she also states that Max Lord has been under 24/7 surveillance, and his brain activity is even being monitored. Now, when Diana returns home to her apartment, she finds that Emma is in her apartment with her rabbit. And apparently, she assembled Wonder Woman's couch. The pair end up getting takeout and just talk. And we learn that Emma's parents were killed in an automobile accident. Now, in downtown Washington, D.C., we see that a crane operator gets mind-controlled and almost demolishes the wrong building. And luckily, Wonder Woman shows up to save the day. We see after that Wonder Woman wakes up from sleeping and discovers that Washington, D.C. is being attacked by parademons. Wonder Woman quickly goes into battle, and when the battle comes to an end, Diana hears Eda's voice and kind of snaps out of her trance. And we see that soldiers are lying on the ground, and it seems that Wonder Woman has just slaughtered them. I found this issue very interesting.
Oh yeah, I agree. This was really good. And importantly, we should mention, the comic literally shows the blackout moment where she leans down to take a picture with a young fan who's at the scene of the wrecking ball incident. And when we see an actual, like, blackout panel, and then the next thing we see is her waking up in her bed and what she perceives as an attack. So that makes me wonder, like, was the phone involved in that? Was that coincidence? Very intriguing.
And it brings up some big questions for me. Is Maxwell Lord behind this? Does he have the ability to control people's minds from his prison, or somehow, like, instill that camera with that? Does this have anything to do with Emma? Maybe she seems to be kind of important to the story, but she's pretty much been a side character. But could she be somehow involved with what's been going on? And being either she's being controlled by Maxwell Lord or being taught by Maxwell Lord. I don't know. That's just a speculation I have.
That would be pretty interesting.
Yeah, she's been pretty much around for these two issues, and I'm just curious if she has anything to do with it. Yeah, it was pretty weird that she was in Wonder Woman's apartment and had put her couch together for her. And it's also been interesting that she was at the furniture store when the guy drove out of control. Now, we didn't see her anywhere near the crane operator, but you never know.
Right.
So.
No, that would be very interesting.
Yeah.
That would be a really cool way of introducing a villain, just sort of really underhandedly like that. That would be cool.
Yeah. So, and I'm sure Maxwell Lord's involved somehow, manipulating the something from behind the scenes.
Well, we know that he's lying because we literally see him do. He forces those, like, was it 10 prisoners to stab themselves in the neck?
Yeah.
Like, I haven't changed. Yeah, okay, buddy.
Yeah, and I just saved you. Sure, you did.
From a threat you created, sure.
So, I'm very intrigued in this story, and I wonder if it's going to wrap next issue or if it's going to go longer.
I hope not. I would be pretty disappointed if it ended this quickly. This is a good story, and I am not surprised, because as I talked about last time we reviewed the previous issue, this they are putting on possibly one of the best teams they could put on for Wonder Woman in terms of creative team, and so I have high expectations for this book, and they've certainly lived up to them so far with these first two issues.
Yes, they have. All right, well, that wraps our comic books talk for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk the season finale of Stargirl.
Claire here with a special announcement. Contrary to popular belief, I didn't cancel Dr. Geek's laboratory. It fell into development purgatory thanks to MacGuffinite crystals or some such science from fiction nonsense. I've put an end to that. I locked all the staff inside the laboratory for the duration of the crisis. Now they can create 24/7 without petty distractions like home lives or free will. Look for new Dr. Geek episodes coming soon. The Gay Dynamics, last up against the wall when the robots rise.
And we're back. Let's talk Stargirl, Season 1, Episode 12, Stars and Stripes, Part 1. So, when the episode opens up, Icicle is staring at the countdown clock, and there's 11 hours and 35 minutes until the launch of Project America. We see Sportsmaster and Tigress have been dispatched to kill Stargirl and her whole family. Now, we see Pap has pulled the kids out of school, and the family is packing up to leave for somewhere safer when Sportsmaster and Tigress attack. Pat takes on Sportsmaster, and right when Sportsmaster has the upper hand, Mikey shoves a drill into his back. Now Pat knocks him out with a lead pipe. And back at the regular house, because Pat was at the garage. But back at the regular house, Courtney and her mom take on Tigress. Courtney's mom, I was surprised. Courtney's mom was impressed with Courtney's abilities, and when she takes out Tigress with her staff, I guess I'm so used to the opposite where they're like, I was expecting her to not want Courtney to be a superhero and use her powers and stuff, but she seems to be really supportive of that, and I like that. It's different from what we normally see.
I like it too, only because, like you said, we've seen the opposite of that so many times, and they always inevitably come around, because of course they will. Like, nobody wants to watch a show where the parent continually, you know, essentially nags the kid. Like, that's, I don't want to watch that consistently. So they always end up coming around. And so while I think logically the show probably could have stayed on that idea longer, I'm kind of glad that they didn't, because, like, of course, we already know that. Like, we don't need to see that again.
Yes, we don't. Now, the whole Justice Society shows up at the cabin, including Justin the janitor and Pat's robot. We see Brainwave test the machine that Dr. Ido has built, And I have to say, it reminded me of Cerebro from Dr. Xavier and the X-Men.
Just a little bit. It was to the point where I was like, man, can they get away with this?
I know.
That wasn't a little bit like Cerebro. I mean, that was extremely close.
I said Dr. Xavier. I meant Charles Xavier.
Well, I mean,
professor.
He's a doctor. So.
Does he have his doctorate?
I thought so. Yeah. Well, I guess they call him professor. I guess yeah. I always just associate that with a PhD, but maybe not.
Maybe not. But anyways, yeah, that reminded me a lot of that. I'm like, okay. We see Courtney's mother ask Pat why he didn't tell her about his superhero stuff before they were married. And Pat answers that everyone he knew from his previous life was dead, even their contact in the FBI, and he thought that life was in the past. So we kind of...
Didn't this conversation feel out of place to you?
Yes. That was my main point of putting this in my notes. It was out of place. We should have had this conversation earlier, and it was weird to have it where we did.
Yeah, it was one of those things where, like, I appreciated the discussion that they had, and that makes sense that they would have that talk. But it was like, why now and not an episode and a half ago? It was the placement of it was like they felt like, oh, we know we need to have this conversation, and we forgot to do it earlier, so let's throw it in now. It was very odd.
It was, and that was the main point reason I stuck it in my notes. Now we see Pat helps Rick unlock his father's diary, suggesting his 1966 Mustang is the key to unlocking it. And the formulas were coordinates for the maps for the tunnels, and Beth is able to use the goggles to display the map, and they discover that the Injustice Society has built a machine that Braywave can use to rewrite millions of people's brains to their version of a perfect America. Now, when Beth hacks into the Injustice Society's computer system, Chuck finds the Injustice Society's manifesto for the broadcast. The new constitution is the values they want to imprint on their victims. They want to combat global warming. They want to force people to embrace solar and wind power. They want to eliminate discrimination over race, religion, and sexual orientation. They want to implement universal health care. And when the Justice Society hears this, they begin to wonder if they're on the right side.
Yeah, like, are we the good guys here?
Yeah, I found that, I mean, they were naming off that stuff, and I'm like, wait a minute, they're going to be helping people.
Yeah, these are all good things.
We find out that once the machine broadcasts, it will take 30 minutes for it to become permanent, and it only affects fully developed minds. And here is the catch. People who fight hard against the reprogramming process will die when their brains shut down. And it's an estimated 25% of their target audience, which is 100 million people, which would be about 25 million who would die. There's your catch 22.
Part of me wishes that they had figured out the plot an episode sooner so that we could have seen them wrestle with that idea more. Because it's interesting, because they've definitely been exploring from the Injustice Society viewpoint that they're doing the right thing, right?
Right.
But it would have been interesting to see the team kind of wrestle with that idea of, like, are we doing the right thing stopping these guys? I would say ultimately they are, because you want to prevent deaths, but at the same time, I think there's an interesting moral quandary there that they introduce and then just kind of brush over really quick.
Right. Honestly, it would have been kind of interesting to see what would have happened if the Injustice Society actually had succeeded, because they were also talking about seceding from the United States, causing almost another civil war. I think that storyline would be interesting to see on its own. But obviously,
right. That would be super interesting to me, because especially because then you get into the point where, like, they're looking at this new nation essentially and looking like, is okay, they've succeeded, should we stop them now? Like, it, obviously the way they accomplished this goal was really bad, but would we be villains if we stopped it at this point? That would be really interesting, but also I can't imagine this show doing that.
No, I can't either. But it was an interesting idea anyways.
Oh yeah, I totally agree.
So we see the gambler hacks into Beth's computer and tells them that counting down is the beginning of the 30-minute mark, which happens to be right then. So it is 30 minutes until Brainwave is finished. We see Barbara, Justin, and Pat go into a trance. Brainwave takes over Pat's mind and forces him to use Stripes to attack Stargirl. And then we got the end of part one. This was definitely a setup episode for part two's finale.
Agreed. This was a good episode. I was so glad, because we were reviewing both of them, that I was finally able to watch these back to back. It was the first time I ever ended, and I was like, oh, I can actually watch the next one now and see where it's going to go.
I thought it would be a good idea to watch these together. So I'm glad we decided on that. All right, well, let's move on to Stargirl Season 1, Episode 13, Stars and Stripe, Part 2. So this episode begins on the Blue Valley High School football field 3 minutes before the end of last episode. We see secret doors open up on the football field, and a huge machine pops out from the underground, basically three satellites. And when it activates, we see all the adults in Blue Valley are in a trance. Now, Pat attacks Stargirl under the control of Brainwave. He begins to fight back, and Beth fears that he's going to die. Beth tries to turn on the Injustice Society's signal blockers, but the gambler is keeping her out of the system. To distract him, Beth accesses his money accounts and begins to donate the monies to different charities. And we see Chuck is able to turn on the signal blockers. I love that. And I love how the gambler reacted to his money being taken away. I think he did a good job with his reaction.
I thought it was a funny scene, but I also thought it was a scene that really did not hold up to any sort of analysis. A, they're talking about how good the gambler is at keeping them out of this stuff. He's literally sitting at the desk doing nothing. He's literally sitting at the desk petting his cat, and they're like, he just keeps throwing up new firewalls. I'm like, with his mind? What is he? He's not doing anything.
I have to say, I noticed that too, but I just kind of like, okay, whatever.
Which was fine. Again, which is fine, but then the thing that I thought was so, like, it made for good dialogue and it made for some funny stuff, but was so odd was that the gambler was in on the conversation. Like, he wasn't just that he was like inside her goggles. Like, he could hear Dr. Midnight talking to her. Like, he was part of their conversation, and they're literally talking their plan out, and was apparently so good at blocking them. And then he hears their plan being executed and is like, what? My money.
We will see that character again at some point. I'm sure of it.
I liked him as a character. I would certainly like to see more. I just thought there was a lot this episode that was like, it produced entertaining scenes, but they just were flimsy logic-wise, I thought. I thought this was one of many of those.
Yeah, I do like that character, though.
Yes, no, I agree.
So once the signal blockers are on, the Justice Society goes to destroy the machine. They run into the Injustice Society, and the big battle begins with a slow motion run towards each other in an attacking scene. It reminded me of Captain America Civil War, the airport battle scene. That's what it reminded me of. Now, Pat takes on Solomon Grundy with his robot, keeping up with the monster for a while. Then Grundy gets the upper hand and starts pulling off the robot limbs. Our man recovers after getting swatted away like a fly, and Rick takes on Solomon Grundy until he realizes he's just a dumb monster and not worth killing. And we see that Rick lets him go. That was kind of interesting.
I wonder, so we've seen, like, the Justice League Unlimited series is an example of this. We've seen depictions of Solomon Grundy as not just a, you know, outright mindless villain, potentially even sympathetic to slash good by the end of Justice League Unlimited. I wonder if we might get a story like this. Now, that would require him to be, they've gone like the full mindless animal one with this, right? Where he doesn't even do like the Solomon Grundy board on a Monday. We don't even get that.
Yeah.
So we would need to see an evolution of the character in that regard. But I do wonder if a future episode or two we might get a sympathetic lens with Solomon. I kind of think we might.
We might. They kind of indicated that here. Of course, then again, we may never see him again. Who knows?
Well, yes, there's also that. Remember, the show is moving fully to CW, so the budget may dictate he never reappear.
Yeah.
Or we might get that. Remember the horrible attempt at Solomon Grundy that Arrow had?
I don't remember that, which was probably a good thing.
Yeah. It is good.
So we see Stargirl fight Cindy, and she decides that she doesn't have time for this and just blasts her with her staff, knocking her unconscious. Yolanda comes across Henry, who explains he had escaped Brainwave and is alive. But when Henry says your friends instead of our friends, Yolanda knows the truth, and we see her slice Brainwave in the throat, killing him.
That was brutal.
That was, and I was not expecting that. And kind of her reaction to it too. It felt like she was kind of numb to her action. I wonder if we're going to see a consequence to that next season, or is it just they're just going to glaze over it?
Well, I certainly hope so. That's one of the things I wanted to talk about with this episode and the season as a whole. Getting in specifically with just this one, this episode introduces the idea that is going to haunt her. Which I think it should. That's pretty freaking brutal.
Yeah.
Like, she didn't just like accidentally kill a guy. I mean, she slashed his throat open. That's awful. You could say well deserved, but nonetheless, for a teenager, like, well, dude.
Yeah. So you saw Courtney's reaction.
It does. That being said, the show kind of teased that it was bothering her, but it never really focused on it after. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I assume that that's be something that they will show and focus on next season, I think. However, looking at some of the other things they did, not necessarily with this specific subplot, but with other subplots, I don't know. I think it's just as likely they never mention it again.
That's possible. I hope they reference it again. I mean, that kind of,
should,
that could,
I mean, they certainly should.
With her being Catholic, too, that should kind of haunt her.
Yeah.
Now, we see Stargirl finds the machine and blasts it with her cosmic staff. Not too surprising. Icicle shows up in Barbara's office and destroys Beth's goggles, killing Chuck. Icicle blasts Beth with ice, and then she grabs Barbara, taking her hostage. Pat goes to save Barbara and buys enough time for Stargirl to attack. Icicle tries to freeze the cosmic staff, but Courtney sends a blast out of the staff and kind of sends them both flying off the building. Wildcat catches Stargirl, but we see Icicle hit the pavement. Well, when Icicle gets up to blast Stargirl, we see Mike rams him with the truck, shattering him into 1,000 pieces.
Can we talk about how the truck shatters him, but the
fall doesn't?
Like, yeah. Several stories doesn't?
I watched Stargirl earlier this week, and when I was working on my notes, I actually rewatched it today, but I was working on my notes as I was watching it, and I had started writing about him hitting the pavement. I thought he shattered when he hit the pavement. I didn't remember Mike hitting him with the truck until I rewatched it. I'm like, wait a minute, wouldn't that fall have killed him?
I would say unsatisfied is the best way I can put the depiction of Icicle in the final episode. One of the things I really enjoyed about his, like, obviously he was going to lose, right? I'm not mad that he lost.
Right.
But one of the things that I enjoyed about his depiction was, like, how casual he was in his powers. Like, this is by far the most powerful version of Icicle we've seen, and I'm fine with that. But that the show really played into that, like, this dude was just, like, casually strong. Like, he would just sit there and lightly blow and freeze a guy to death. And then we see him in this episode, and he's incapable of really doing anything. I thought the laziest thing they did was their good guy death, or the consequence death, was the goggles. I mean, come on. I'm sorry. I know that the goggles mean a lot, but, like, That just does not carry any emotional weight. It just doesn't. You can characterize the goggles as much as you want. It just doesn't. It doesn't mean as much. And then again, we thought like the fight. He's doesn't really accomplish anything in any of the fights that he's engaged in. He doesn't really do much. And then, like we said, his ultimate defeat. If he had shattered falling to the ground, I'd have been fine with that. I'd been like, yeah, that makes sense. That's a deadly fall. But then he gets up and then the truck breaks and was like, I mean, okay, fair, but you literally just showed him surviving an impact of that level.
Yeah. That's an issue.
I don't know. He's your big villain. They did the thing where he is the final boss, so to speak. So that they did right, but then everything else around it, I personally was not satisfied with it. I was not satisfied with the level of competency that he showed in the fight did not match what we had shown earlier in the season.
Yeah, and I have to agree with you. The way the news media were going on about this episode, I thought we were going to get some sort of death or something, but like you said, just it being the goggles wasn't enough. I think one of the team members needed to perish just to show the consequence and show what kind of level Icicle is as a villain.
I agree. I mean, the show has, and that's the thing that's weird, is it's not like the show has shied away from killing characters. I mean, they killed the magician's kid. It was so shocking. Both you and I just assumed that he might come back in some capacity, and he didn't. He's just dead.
Right. They didn't kill his
junior. They just killed him.
They didn't
so only. It's not like the show is hesitant to do that.
Yeah, and they didn't only kill his son; they killed him, and I believe the wife too, right? If I remember right, they killed that whole family.
Oh, of the magician, yeah, the entire family died. Well, it's implied. We don't technically see the wife die, but she's dead.
Yeah, she did.
Playing up the goggles being destroyed as the big loss of the episode, I thought was ridiculous, and then I just would have. I personally wanted more out of Icicle. I can understand if not everybody necessarily felt that way, but I personally was not satisfied with how he was portrayed in the final episode.
The other thing that I was disappointed in this episode, Justin, the Shining Knight, didn't really do anything in this episode except hold up his sword and say he's going to slay the dragon.
So that kind of leads well into one of the general points that I wanted to talk about with the show and how I think it can improve. So before I start this, let me preface, I enjoyed this season quite a bit. I like the show. I am a fan. One of the things I think this show can do to improve is to improve their subplots. I think the best thing this show did is it told its main story very well, and it focused on its main story very well. I don't feel like it got sidetracked like the CW shows tend to do, so I give it a lot of credit in that regard. However, I think its weakness were its subplots, where it would just introduce things and then either never resolve them or almost hand wave them away. Like, it would introduce ideas and then just be like, it would either completely forget about them or it would just kind of, you know, and it's done in a completely unsatisfying manner. Shining Knight, what ultimately was the point of introducing that character?
Yeah,
clearly I'm assuming John's really wanted that character to be in the show. And maybe that's it. That was just them humoring him. I don't know, because he didn't. Imagine what they could have done with the extra time if you don't use him.
Yeah.
Other examples, major examples. Icicle Jr. We know I'm sure we're going to get Icicle Jr. That's how it is in the comics. You know, the son becomes Icicle also. That's going to feel like out of nowhere. Where was he these last two episodes? I don't mean he did not need to be a major character, but they literally I legitimately wonder, Drew, if the actor was somehow unavailable, because it's inexplicable that he would be totally absent both of these episodes, especially when his dad and grandparents are talking about him and like, maybe we should include him in this, and then there's nothing. There's not even like an end of the season tease with like, we see him go like new Green Goblin from the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies, where we see him like get angry at the hero and take up his dad's legacy.
Yeah, we didn't even see that here.
Nothing. No reference. I wouldn't blame people if they forgot that that character existed.
You know they're going to use him at some point. So it's going to be weird. And I'm sure it's going to be I'm going to avenge my father kind of thing, too, against the Justice Society.
They had plenty of time. Again, this is where, like, if you don't do Shining Knight, and I am not opposed to Shining Knight being a character on the show. I'm not angry that he was part of the show. But, like, let's say you take that out because, in my opinion, ultimately it didn't really add anything. You take him out, imagine committing all that extra time to scenes with Icicle Jr. instead. Doesn't that build that character up better for the next season?
Yeah.
Because clearly he's meant to be, you know, some of these things that they're introducing are meant to be down the road stuff, but I feel like you need to do a little more. The pen? What happened with that?
I know. Went away. We were both suspecting Mike to find that thing at some point or try to use it, and then they kept focusing on it too during the season.
Only in the first half, and it's like they completely forgot about it. It just went away. The last time we saw it, they like zoomed in on the pen, we heard the laugh, and that was it. I think it's the last time we saw that pen.
So they may end up not doing anything with it now.
Which is, yeah, again, and so there's that. One of the scenes that we didn't mention at the end of the penultimate episode, the Fiddler gets killed.
Yeah.
And then not addressed at all by any of the villains. They're just like, oh, like, nothing. Not even like, oh, yeah, she's dead. She was barely a character, so they barely ever focused on her enough. So her death, to me, personally, meant nothing.
Right.
Had no opinion on it. And then they randomly introduced the son. I think maybe we had seen him like once or twice before, but not really.
I don't remember seeing him.
At the end, he's got that scene where she tells him essentially to beat a kid up with his instrument, and then we see that scene, and it was like, where is this character coming from? He's not been a thing at all. What is going on?
They're setting him up for next season, I'm pretty sure.
Like, but not enough. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, I know it's not enough.
Just like out of nowhere, where you're like, what the hell? What? This, you know what I mean? Like, that's the thing. Like, I agree. There are a lot of things that I think they are setting up, but they're just not doing. I don't need half an hour focus on this stuff by any means. That's not what I'm arguing. They introduce the ideas and they just either leave them completely hanging to the point where it's like they don't even exist anymore, or they just sort of randomly introduce something and then do nothing with it, or they kind of hand wave it away. The Fiddler exists and then they randomly kill her at the end of an episode. You know what I mean? It was just, that was, to me, that was the weakness of the show. I thought they told their main story, which was Stargirl and Pat learning how to be a team together, very well. A very good focus story. I give the show a lot of credit for that. Anytime they tried to do a subplot, never worked. I don't think there's a single one that stuck out to me as something that was good.
The other thing we see in this episode is that Cindy finds the Eclipso Diamond, kind of hints at next season's big villain.
Possibly, because then the other hint we also get is the Shade. We learn that he was also a member of the Injustice Society.
Yeah, I don't know anything about that character. So, well, I remember seeing that character and going, who's that?
He's in the Justice League. Either Justice League or Justice League Unlimited. He's in that. I always get him confused. I think he's a Hawkman villain, but I think maybe there's another shadow guy. I think there's two shadow villains, and I occasionally get them confused. But I think he is a Hawkman villain, which would make sense for him to be a JSA guy.
Yeah, that would be.
But I certainly know him. Like, I knew immediately who it was. So that would be really cool. That's just also a really interesting, like, that's a really cool live action idea for a character. You know what I mean? Like, just the living shadow sort of stuff. That's going to be really cool to see how they do that.
Yeah.
That'll be cool. But it does make me wonder. One of the things this show, again, did, like I said, it focused on its main story, which was Pat and Stargirl essentially versus Icicle really well. And it focused on those guys really well. Introducing Eclipso and then also the Shade and sort of saying that there's sort of like the Injustice Society is definitely not defeated was the message that was sent there. Like, yes, a fraction of them were defeated, but the group as a whole still very much exists is interesting. So I hope that they can, like, it's like Eclipso with the Injustice Society, if that makes sense. Because what I think would not serve the show well is if it's, on one hand, you've got the Injustice Society threat with the Shade, and then on the other hand, you've got Eclipso doing her own thing.
Yeah.
I think that would not serve the show well. I think they've got to be in kind of going hand in hand.
Now we see the episode skips to 6 weeks later at Christmas, and there's a Christmas party at Courtney's house with all the Justice Society invited. We see Courtney gives Pat the gift she was originally going to give to her father all those years ago. I thought that was a really interesting scene because it kind of cements Pat as her father.
And that was really, you could see, was the clearly what the finale was trying to push, the sort of thesis of the season as a whole was essentially Pat becoming her dad.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways. Like, it starts with her essentially taking up the Stargirl legacy to live up to her dad, and then she sort of realizes that in a lot of ways Pat's her dad. And it was one of those things where it was like, as I saw the show kind of posit that, especially with the scene that we're talking about, it was like, oh yeah, that really was what the season was about. I do think they could have been a little bit more explicit with that at times during the season. It wasn't quite like the Lois Lane series where it felt like a message out of nowhere. Like, it was one of those things when you thought about it, it made sense.
Right.
But it was also like, that's definitely not what the show felt like it was about midway through. But now that I can see it looking back, yeah, I think you could have maybe focused on that a little bit more. I think if they had played up the sort of... One of the things that I thought the show, especially in the middle part of the show, was that, yes, we know that Pat was her stepdad, but in a lot of ways, he just kind of felt like a dude that she knew.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I think if they had played up the familial part of it, and not that they didn't, but I don't know, you know what I mean? Like, I think they could have, I don't know,
explored
that a little bit more explicitly in the middle part of the season, and I think that arc would have been more clear. Because it really was one of those things where I saw that scene, and I had to think about it. I was like, oh no, that does make sense. But it wasn't one of those scenes where I saw it and I was like, oh wow, that is the perfect ending to that season. And I think it could have been, because ultimately I think it makes sense. But I think if they had done more in the middle part to make that arc clear, I think that scene would have worked even better.
The other thing I want to say about this episode is it worked hard to have a happy ending. We had the Christmas party going on. We had Stargirl going out with the Cosmic Staff, flying over the Winter Wonderland, and then Stripe showing up and them sitting on the water tower with the American flag waving in the background, and then they take off flying into the horizon. It could have almost been a series finale, honestly. Yeah. They definitely had to put up there dedicated to Courtney Elizabeth Johns, who we know is Jeff Johns' sister, who had passed. I don't know, she passed away quite a while ago, I believe.
I'm gonna be honest with you, Drew. That actually had the biggest emotional punch for me of anything in the episode was that text, more so than any of the actual scenes.
I can see that.
I was like, oh, like, you know, like, you knew, I, you know, that we both knew that's what, you know, that whole character was about and for. But it was one of those things, like, seeing that ending and then seeing that pop up was like, oh man, I felt that.
Yeah.
Honestly, way more than any of the scenes.
It did have an emotional impact just because we knew the story behind it, so.
Yeah.
All right. We get to that last scene. Sylvester Pemberton goes to Pat's old apartment looking for Pat. I'm like, what is Starman doing alive?
Joel McHale's getting work, Drew.
He is.
The check.
I'm really interested to see why he's still alive and how's that going to affect Stargirl. Is he going to go find Pat and ask for his cosmic staff back?
Probably.
I could.
Initially, yeah.
That's. that's going to be interesting. And you know how sad Courtney's going to be if she has to give up the cosmic staff?
Oh, yeah, but I mean, we both know that's not going to last.
No, I know it. I know it's not going to last, but it'll be interesting. And then it'll be interesting if, you know, he takes Pat back on as his sidekick. What's that going to leave with Courtney? Is she going to be his sidekick? I'm just curious what the dynamic's going to be and what's going to happen. And why is he not dead? Or is there some sort of trick there, too?
Well, I wonder, we've seen in most recently in Scott Snyder's run that Starman is typically a sort of cosmic being. And so I wonder if the show is going in that direction. Like, clearly, up until this point, the betrayal that we've seen is essentially just your standard dude who's a superhero, right?
Right.
But there is a lot of precedent in the comics that he is not necessarily immortal. You know what I mean? So not completely human in a lot of ways. So I wonder if the show's going to go in some direction like that.
It is possible.
I think it's pretty cool. I mean, I wasn't totally shocked by that, by him coming back. It sort of makes sense as a wrench to throw into the works, so to speak. So I'll be pretty curious to see that. I can't imagine he's going to be around, honestly, even for the whole season. But it'll be interesting to see what they do. I would love it if he was a full season character, but I don't know. For whatever reason, I can't picture him as a season regular, if that makes sense. I don't know.
Yeah. One thing that was disappointing from this season, we got no Green Lantern, we got no Flash.
All I'm saying is I'm pretty sure we got something from John specifically saying that Flash and Green Lantern were going to play a role, so that was BS.
Yeah, unless he counts that first episode, which I don't.
Flash isn't even in, the only thing we get with the Flash is his helmet, and the closest thing we get with Green Lantern, other than his broken lantern, is there was those green flames that we assume were from his ring, but even that wasn't explicit.
Right.
So yeah, that was a lie. That's all I can say. Like that's garbage.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody expected Flash or Green Lantern to be part of the show. I certainly didn't. I knew that it was supposed to include the JSA, but like I just naturally, especially the Flash, like of course that one's off the table. That's fine. Green Lantern I would never have actually expected to get. It's just frustrating because like if you're not going to do them, that's fine. That don't introduce they don't make people think that you are going to do something with them.
Yeah, because all you do is disappoint them. All right, well, that wraps up our episode for this week. Do you have a shout-out, Cletus?
Yeah, so I thought since he was the villain of the season, and because I think there's an extremely strong chance that we will get his son taking up his legacy, I wanted to shout-out the first comic appearance for Icicle, whose name they actually changed. I didn't remember that they had changed his name slightly. So Jordan in the show is J-O-A-R in the comics. His son's name, Cameron, is the same for both. And his first appearance, he's a pretty old character, was in All-American Comics number 90, which came out in 1947.
Okay. And if it's like Cletus' shout-out from last week, I could not link it to anything for you guys to see it. So,
hey, one day, though, If the DC Universe comic library continues to grow like the Marvel one did, it will be those things will get on there.
That's true.
I know I'm so frequently pessimistic about stuff, but I am actually very optimistic about the growth of that digital library. I think that's going to turn into a really fantastic resource down the road.
I think so too. All right, and for my shout out, I am going to shout out about the DC Universe app because Krypton Season 2 is on there now.
Oh, nice.
We're way past our time to review it, I guess, but it's on there now, so I'm going to probably check it out when we don't have anything else to watch.
Yeah, I understand why it wasn't on there, but it really would have been best served if it had just gone on there almost like a week after sort of thing.
Yeah.
Like if it airs
and then a week, even 2 week, even a 2 week delay, then put it on the DC Universe app, I think it would have been well served.
Yeah. I just found it odd that it's on there all of a sudden.
I mean, so. It makes sense because it's gone, right? It's canceled. So there's no reason really for Sci-Fi to hold on to it.
No, there's not. It's not coming back, so.
And I can't, they're not going to get any syndication from it. It didn't go long enough.
But I might just watch it so I can just say I watched it.
No, I was pretty, the show, when we reviewed it, I thought the show started really, really slowly, but it got pretty interesting by the end. So I'm pretty interested in checking out season two also.
All right. Well, if you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about tonight, you can reach us at our feedback line at 317-564-9133. Leave us a message, or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. All right, Cletus, coming up next week, we got Aquaman, Batman, Nightwing, Catwoman, Justice League, the Wonder Woman Annual, Dark Knights, Death Metal Guidebook Number 1, which I'm wondering what the heck that is. And of course, our season finale of Doom Patrol. And we'll have a special guest joining us, so make sure you tune in. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
In brightest day,
in blackest night, no evil shall escape my sight. Let those who worship evil's might beware my power, Green Lantern's light.
I'm off.
Where are you going?
I've got to go punch a clock with my other boss.
I can see where this is going to be a long commute.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.